Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 35 of Weed All About It, or what I'm calling Payday on the Palouse, about my visit to Gary Bailey's harvest on August 11th. Bailey, who lives outside St. John, Washington, has been a member of the WGC for 2 years, representing all of Whitman County, the largest wheat-producing county in the United States. You might have noticed the absence of one of the Weed All About It signature songs at the beginning of this podcast. For the record, I've gotten feedback from frustrated listeners who just want to get to the meat of the podcast. I've listened, hence the shorter opening. But for those who like to hum along, the podcast will continue to conclude with my odes to Eastern Washington wheat farmers. And there's a new one this week. Although I rode along in Mark Shessler's combine in episode 34, the Senate Majority Leader and I mostly talked about his political career and philosophy. Afterwards, I thought it would be illuminating to visit Bailey to talk about growing up on the farm, landlords, marketing, quality, and what it's like to get paid once a year. For wheat farmers, a lot of the information I discuss with Bailey is old hat, but this podcast is also being listened to by people without a direct connection to agriculture. As I explained in episode 5 entitled The Trifecta, when I discussed my own influences in agriculture, it's important to provide those without direct knowledge of the industry the context to understand exactly what farmers are doing. Besides, even farmers will get a kick out of Bailey's sensible answers to some questions I doubt even his neighbors would ask. Bailey counts 1989 as his first year farming. I tend to disagree with that timeline. It's been my experience that farm children are sopping up agriculture from the day they are born. In Bailey's case, that was 62 years ago. He farms with his brother Mark, and this year he was working with his nephew and niece, Clint and Aaron O'Keefe. They started harvesting winter wheat July 26 and will finish up with spring wheat around August 26th. Although most people consider combine driving the pinnacle of the harvest hierarchy, Bailey was not in either of the two combines working his family's harvest this year. Instead, he was driving the farm's Case IH quad-track tractor, pulling a bank-out wagon. For those who don't know what that is, I'll let Bailey explain.
A bank-out wagon is a cart that goes to the combine, picks up the grain, and then ferries it out to the truck. And it's really useful in the hills of the Palouse because the trucks can't get close to the combines in a lot of situations. And the combine has to deadhead a lot of times. So this device, which holds about 1,000 bushels, makes it much more efficient.
And this has been a switch that has happened very recently, really, within the last 10 years, isn't it?
Yeah, we've seen carts become popular in this area in the last 10 years. I'm guessing that in other areas they've probably been around for a while longer.
Why aren't you in the combine? Why are you in the bank-out wagon?
Well, there's only so many combines to drive, and I guess I drew the short straw. But actually, I've driven combine for a lot of years. Just recently started driving this, and it's pretty good to have someone that knows the lay of the land and where things are in behind the wheel of the bank-out wagon because they know where to be.
How many full loads from the combine can the cart take?
I can take about 3 of this combine and probably 4 or 5 of the other combine, but 2 of each combine fills the cart.
A bushel of wheat is approximately 60 pounds, so 1,000 bushels in the bank-out wagon is 60,000 pounds, a load that requires the tractor's 535 horsepower to maneuver up and down over and around the rolling hills that are a feature of Palouse terrain, where combines remind me of aircraft carriers majestically sweeping through waves of wheat. A tractor pulling a bank-out wagon is more like a PT boat, darting here and there, and occasionally, as you'll hear, providing a bit of a thrill. So what are we harvesting now? What variety is this here in front of us?
This is Puma, which is Aaron Carter's WSU release.
And how is it performing for you? Will you grow it again?
We'll grow it again. We had it last year, and it was good as well. So we sure like it in this area. It seems to do quite well.
So Puma has a pretty good quality designation. I think it's at the top of the ranking as most desirable. How important is it to you that you grow quality wheat?
It's very important, and it's become more of a focus ever since I got on the commission, because I understand now how important quality is to our overseas customers. You only have to go on one overseas trip and you'll find out how they value quality of our wheats.
It's very unusual that a farmer out here in eastern Washington owns all of his own land. How many landlords do you have, Gary?
What did we count up? 7, I believe. They're very important to us. They're sort of like your business partner, because without them, you don't have a job to do. You know, we've been fortunate, and we've had long-term leases with these families for many years. One of them we've had since I was a little kid, and they still come up every year and want to ride on their land and see how their crop's doing. So it's just been a pleasure to work with some of those people. And the neat thing about it is that, you know, even though they don't know how to do the nuts and bolts of farming, they're interested. They come and ask questions and truly want to know what's going on.
So how old were you when you learned to drive?
You know, I think I'm probably just like most farm kids, and that you probably started driving at 10 or 12 years old on a limited basis. You know, we all learned how to drive spotting truck, which means you just drive in the field. You don't go to the elevator. And until you can get a driver's license, you weren't able to go to the elevator.
So how old were you when you worked your first harvest?
I would say the first full harvest was probably when I was 14 and got my ag permit, and then you could drive to the elevator. Prior to that, you know, you were spotting truck on a interim basis, but I'd say when you're 14 is probably when it started.
What was the year that you graduated from truck to combine?
I think I started driving combine when I was in college full-time. I think freshman in college, I went to work for my uncle down by Colotus and drove combine for him, and that area is early enough that I was able to put in their harvest and then turn around and come back and put in harvest up here.
Do these 29 harvests that you have been involved in, do they all just mix together into a blur, or are there harvests that you remember particularly well?
You know, they all kind of mix together. You know, you do remember some of them with, got a really particularly good yield, or my favorite is more when the high prices are on board.
So if you had to choose one, high prices or high yield, which would you choose?
Well, in the Palouse here, we have pretty consistent yields, so we can kind of count on a pretty good crop every year. So I'll take the price.
As you look back through your last 30 years, there's been a lot of changes that we have gone through here in the last 10 or 20, but are there things that you miss about those early harvests?
Oh, yeah, probably, you know, the lunches. You know, we used to get out and sit in the shade of the combine or the truck and have lunch together and visit. But nowadays, it's 24/7, so to speak. We start about 8 o'clock in the morning and quit about 8 o'clock at night, and we work right through lunch hour.
And so I have a lunchbox at my feet here. What is in this lunchbox?
Well, not much right now. I've already eaten most of it. I raided the refrigerator this morning and found some chicken strip, some cauliflower, and I think there's a bag of potato chips in there and an apple.
All right. Tell me about your farming operation. I know you farm with your brother. Are you older or younger, and what's the division of labor?
I'm 5 years older than Mark, and we live on opposite ends of the operation. Road miles, we're almost 18 miles apart. You know, we take care of mainly the ground near where we're at. I've been taking care of the books for all these years. Mark does a lot more of the equipment purchase, stuff like that, and a lot of the agronomy work. We both do marketing, and we both do FSA work. We seem to have a pretty good division.
Farming with family can be difficult. How have you and your brother managed to keep things on an even keel over all this time?
Well, I think it started with Mom and Dad. You know, that was the glue that kind of kept everything together when things get a little rough. And, you know, my folks are both gone now, but I think the glue has dried hard enough that things aren't going to change now.
Are you one of those farmers who don't like to say how many acres they're farming, or are you one of those farmers who will reveal that number?
I'm more likely not to reveal that number. I look at it like that's kind of asking you what you make. So I don't ask salaried people what their salary is, and so I look at their inquiry into how many acres do you farm is almost asking you what you make.
Now, do you plan to farm as long as you're physically able, or do you have a... We're going over some rough ground here. Do you plan to farm as long as you're physically able, or do you have a retirement plan you're heading toward?
Well, I'd like to retire on paper here in the next 5 years or so. But yeah, physically, I hope I'm well enough to keep doing this. It would be nice not to have to quit because your health turned on you.
What's the best thing about harvest, and what's the worst thing about harvest?
Well, the best thing I think about harvest is that this is your paycheck for the year. And so it's kind of exciting from that standpoint. Maybe the worst part might be the long hours. You know, we're going to be doing this for roughly 30 days in a row, and it's kind of nice to have a day off once in a while.
But when you do have a day off during those 30 days, it's because you're broke down, right?
It broke down or it rained, that's right.
We've got a pretty good crop this year. Do you have a different attitude when you're harvesting a bumper crop versus one that's just so-so?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, yield makes income. And so, yeah, you do feel better about having a good crop. You know, we're fortunate we have a strong crop insurance system, but we don't want to rely on that. We want to make it with yield and price.
What's the most important part of farming? Is it the agronomic end, or is it the marketing end?
Well, I think you can be more successful if you're a better marketer. You know, of course, the agronomic stuff is pretty standard from year to year, but marketing may not be. You know, there's different market opportunities in different years.
Okay, so we're coming up to the combine now, and he's matching its speed, and the spout is out, and now the cart is under the spout. We're turning a corner, and he's turning a corner with it, and the grain is pouring out, and the combine continues to gobble up the wheat in front of it. So 2008 to 2013 were just wonderful years in terms of prices and crops. You know, we often talk about farmers getting healed up during good times. Did you get healed up? What did those years mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, it helped a lot of people, and it allowed us to update equipment. You know, we had kind of somewhat of an aging fleet of tractors and combines and stuff like that, and so we were able to get a lot up to speed, so to speak, and then pay down the bank notes, of course. That's always a bonus.
How has your thinking changed since you have come on the Washington Grain Commission board?
Well, I think probably you're so much more aware of what it takes to market this grain. Farmers are typically understand how to grow it, how to sell it, and they know it ends up in Portland and gets on a boat and goes somewhere. But this has opened my eyes up to the relationships that we have with our overseas customers and the fine work that U.S. Wheat people overseas do to work with the milling companies and finding more uses for our wheat.
It is something to think about that all of this wheat here, or at least 90% of it, is going to go to another country, overseas someplace.
Well, that's right. We knew all along that our wheat was going overseas, but I didn't know the work that went into making that happen and the relationships you have with the overseas customers and things of that nature. And, you know, I've been exposed to U.S. wheat and the people that we have overseas are doing a tremendous job.
Gary is unloading the bank out wagon, what he also calls a cart, into the truck. And the truck will take this grain to the elevator, and the wheat will start its journey overseas. You have three sons. Do you foresee any of your sons taking over the farm?
Well, it's hard to say. At this point in time, they all seem pretty happy with their families and their jobs and whatnot. But when I was a young kid, I didn't think I'd ever be back here farming either. So never say never.
So if you couldn't have been a farmer, what livelihood would you have chosen for yourself?
Well, I probably would have stayed with the banking that I was doing right out of college. You know, I enjoyed that. It was tough times in the 80s being an ag banker, but, you get into work with people that are involved in agriculture is probably what I would have been doing.
Are there things that you can tell from the cab of this bank out wagon about the crop?
Sure. Mark just went through a piece of wheat that was laying down on the ground, so I'm assuming that was probably double fertilized right there, and it was just too heavy to stand up on its own. You know, there's lots of different things like that. You can see weedy patches out there where maybe the herbicides didn't work or there's an airplane skip. After a few years, you can read the land like you read your own hand.
It's hard to believe that this land out here that we're going up over in this tractor that's 535 horsepower was once farmed by real horses.
Yeah, it's interesting. And it's over the years when we're out here working, once in a while we'll snag a horseshoe on a piece of equipment. And over the years I've collected these up, and I probably have somewhere between a half a dozen to a dozen horseshoes sitting in a pile in the shop. I just need to do something with those.
So these are actual horseshoes that were thrown by the horses that worked this ground probably 100 years ago.
Yeah, I believe they are.
Bailey says when he has some free time, he plans to mount the horseshoes he has gathered as a testament to the tough men and women and horses and mules who broke open the Palouse sod beginning in the 1880s. I have had the opportunity to view photos from that era, and all I can say is, wow. We may think we know what hard work is today, but for my part, I doubt I have ever worked as hard as a member of a harvest crew in the Palouse 100 years ago, when air conditioning was a heated breeze. I have posted a photo of one of those early crews and their teams of horses on our Facebook page, along with photos I took of the Bailey family's more modern affair. Search for Washington Grain Commission. Finally, I wrote the song that comes at the end of this podcast for folks who think agriculture is just another business that should function without the government's help that comes in the form of crop insurance subsidies and environmental offsets. First, agriculture is like no other industry because humanity needs it to survive. Maybe your phone will identify the nearest restaurant, but it can't provide the food. Second, and this is what the song addresses, Farmers have a wonderful but fickle partner in Mother Nature. Bottom line, you just never know what Mrs. N is going to provide in terms of the weather. This year, she was mostly benign when it comes to the winter wheat crop, but spring crops were late getting in the ground because of constant spring rains followed by extremely hot July and August temperatures, which have pinched yields. As the song puts it, Mother Nature's in the driver's seat. Hope you enjoyed episode 35 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling Payday on the Palouse, about WGC Commissioner Gary Bailey's harvest. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join me again for another episode of Wheat All About It.
We love the land, the farm's our career, but make no mistake, we do not steer. Mother Nature's in the driver's seat. I'm talking life and I'm talking wheat. We're riding shotgun, we have our say, but Mrs. N, she knows the way. We feed you